So we're holding on Chet on the bays, 6 lines from the bottom. Okay, so Chet on the bays, 6 lines from the bottom. We mentioned in connection with the whole discussion about where commits have to be done and where everybody calling about doing commits inside the heichal. Gufa, so getting back to something that we said before, Amar Rav Yechonon, shlomim sheshachten beheichal kshein. We mentioned in that connection that Rav Yechonon said that if you shech shlomim inside the heichal, ignoring normally you would shech them in the azara, then they're kosher. We brought that in connection. We use that to show that Rav Yechonon learns one kind of thing from another when it comes to kodshim.
Right.
Therefore, we mentioned in that connection that on the one hand, you have with the Minchas Chavitin, he said that you have to bring the whole thing at one time. You can't do the Kaddish by halves. On the other hand, he says with a regular Mincha, if you bring only part of it and put it in a Kli Sharis, then that part becomes Kaddish. No, you still have to fill up the whole rest of it. But yeah. Anyway, so we mentioned in that connection, Amar Rav Yechonon, Shlomim Sheshachten Beheichal Kshein. If you shecht Shlomim inside the Heichal, where normally you would be shechting them in the Azara, they're kosher, Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Shchotei Petach Ayo Moed, because the Pasuk says you should check the Shlomim in front of the door of the Ayo Moed, which means in the Azara. And as we said, Velohiei Tofol Chomom in your Iker. We shouldn't say that the secondary thing, the Azara, which has a secondary level of Kedusha relative to the Heichal, shouldn't be more important than the Iker. So if you're able to shech Shlomim in the Azara, how much more so you should be able to shech them in the Heichal?
Yeah, but
that's it. It's on the other side of Pesach HaRamayim. You have Pesach HaRamayim, means in front of the door. Yeah, it means instead of being on one side of the door, you're on the other side. Yeah, instead of being on one side of the door, you're on the other side of the door. As a matter of fact, actually, you have a discussion among our friends, you have Mitzvah Skinner and others talk about the question. You learn from Zvokin that the door of the Heichal has to be open in order for Shlomim to be kosher when they're shechted in the Azara. Would we say the same thing? Shechted inside the Heichal, that the door needs to be open? Maybe not, because the fact is you're in front of the door. Either way, you're inside the Heichal. On the other hand, no, that's not the point. The point is that you want to be in front of the entrance of the Ohel Moed, but like this, you're inside the Ohel Moed. So one way of looking at it, which I think the Minchas Chinuch says in that case, it would be fine. Another way, another one of the Achronim, the Karen Oda, I don't remember, says that no, the fact of the matter is, if you're going to say that Tofel can't be more common than the Iker, okay, but you also don't have a source to say that the Heifel can be stronger than the Azara. If in the Azara it has to be open, then in the Heifel, if you're going to shift inside the Heifel, it also has to be open. All right, whatever, the point is that you can shift in the Heifel. Fine. Mace, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. We learn in a Brant that you would have been to say that, Minayin Sheni Kifu Obikachovim et Azara. How do we know that if Goyim are surrounding the Azara and besieging it and firing arrows or other artillery into it, so therefore it's dangerous for the Kohenim to be eating the Korbanos and the Azara because of the fire, because of the artillery? How do we know that Kohenim Nechnasim Lahefel will open the Kodshim Kodshim or Shiyarim Nachas? How do we know that the Kohenim are allowed to go into the Hefel and eat their portions of the Kodshim Kodshim and the leftovers of the Nachas? Yeah, which means, actually, hello, which means Rashi says, the question is, we don't say that those Kodshim become possible by going out from the Azara into the Hefel.
But that's
the point would still remain. If we were to say that the Heichal is considered a separate area, then we would say it's considered like going out. Just like even in a Zman Sakana, if the Kohenim were to take the Shiraim of the Mincha outside the Azara, even if it's a matter of danger, fine, the Korach Nefesh, very nice, the fact would remain, the Mincha would still be possible, because you take it out of the Azara, it becomes possible. Same thing with a Chatos, same thing with an Asham. So the question is, how do we know that here it's not the same thing? Going into the Heichal is not the same as going outside of the Azara.
We
discussed this in Zvachim. Talmud Lomar, but Kodesh HaKadoshim Kekalanu. The answer is, since the Pasuk says you can eat them in the Kodesh HaKadoshim means the Heichal, which relative to the Azara is considered Kodesh.
It's not really
Kodesh. So actually you have. Some of the Mephoroshim talk about maybe it means they could even eat it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim if necessary, but the point is, you see that at any rate they can eat it in the Heichal.
Now
the point is, in other words, that we're saying they can eat it in the Heichal. So the question is, if Rav Yochanan is telling me that you can use, if Rav Yochanan is telling us you can use the logic of lo yehei tofel chomum in Iker, that you can't say the Azara has greater kedusha than the Heichal because it doesn't, then according to that logic, v'holam aleikra. So why would we need a pasuk? Lema b'chassar oymar yichlu. Well, let's say the same thing. The pasuk says that chesam and alaf the top. The pasuk says that you should eat the korbanos in the courtyard of the oil moed, meaning in the azara. And again, below you have topo chomim and ikra. You should argue by the same logic that the topo can't be stronger than the ikra, so if you can eat it in the azara, how much more so you could eat it in the hekel. Why do we need a plastic? The kodesh kadashim says lanu, according to Rav Yochanan, that we can learn this by a kavah chomer. The answer is, but this, avoda, the odom ovid b'makom rabbi, it's one thing when it comes to the avoda. Sure, a person might be, when it comes, let's say, to a human boss or a human master or whatever, you might well be doing avoda in front of, in the same place where your master lives or sits or whatever, because not all work can be done all site. Some of it has to be done on site. Therefore, minin shloye chato chomim eker. So then we can use this logic and say, if you're allowed to do the avoda, for example, shechting a shlomim, in the azara, how much more so you're allowed to do it in the hezer, which is, so to speak, more Hashem's place. Achila, but when it comes to eating, a person, it's not respectful for a person to eat in the presence of his master. So therefore, you can't use that logic. Time is the cost of cross. We need the actual pasuk, the Kodesh HaKadosh HaTeflanu, holy cost of cross. But if you didn't have the pasuk, lo yaitofo chomimini ikra layamrin, and then you would not say that logic. Because you shouldn't be eating in front of your Rebbe, in front of your master. Right. Because it's not their house. Right, obviously. The meaning of it was the Kohenim by rights should not be eating in the hekel. I mean, a special pasuk to tell us that they're allowed to do that. When it comes to shchita, though, that's different. And the other avodas, that's different because those, it's normal to do avodas. It's not so disrespectful to do avodas in your master's presence anyway. Well, that's what we're saying. No, we're saying even in the hekel, where the shchina resides, you don't need, you can use the kavah chomer for that. If you can do the avodas in the azara, how much more so you can do it in the hekel? That's the idea, because we just said, because the avoda, a person might well do avoda with makom rabbi, but not, he won't eat with makom rabbi. Meaning the hechel. And the Kodesh HaKadosh means the hechel. You have, by the way, we're saying over here that only if goyim surrounded the azara and are besieging it and firing shots into it or whatever, implying normally you shouldn't be doing this. The point is also, Acharonim talk about, given this logic that we said, that Einadim Ochel and Makom Rabbi, and we need a special pasuk for it, that implies, therefore, it's a fine. So the Minchas Chinuch says, if you were to do it at other times, you wouldn't be over, usually you have a lav not to go into the hayfol without a purpose. Over here, the Minchas Chinuch says, okay, fine, since we see that in an emergency situation, the Torah allows it, then even if you were to do it not in an emergency situation, you wouldn't be over on that lav. You shouldn't, because not respectful, but you wouldn't be actually over on the line. Okay. Fine. It's nice. So now we have another discussion.
When it says, and you don't do it, you're over on an effort.
So
it's so much more for the
edge. Oh, that's fine, but so the fact is, the Hashem himself gives you permission by saying the Kodesh HaKadosh and Tekla. Okay. It's nice. So now we have discussion as follows. Now let's talk about a korban mincha. Again, a normal korban mincha consists of flour mixed with oil, and then you sprinkle lavoina on top of it. What happens then if you mix the flour and oil together outside the azara, outside the wall of the azara? Normally, the person brings the flour from his house. You put it into a kli sharis. You mix it with oil. You measure it in the kli sharis. You mix it. You mix it, and then you make a mincha out of it. Like this, if you mix it outside the azara. Reb Yechanan Amach Sula, Rish Lakish Amach Shera. Reb Yechanan says then that it's possible. Rish Lakish says it's kosher. Rish Lakish Amach Shera, Rish Lakish says like this. The reason why it's kosher, Dichtiv V'yotak Alei Hashem V'natan Alei Levoina, because it has a possible described. How do you bring a mincha? You bring flour, solus, and then you pour on it oil, and you place on it levoina. V'hoder, and then the next pasuk continues, V'heviyah b'nei Aaron ha-koyinim b'komat. Then it says you should bring it to b'nei Aaron the koyinim, and they drew k'mitzah. Implying, k'mitzah ve'elach mitzvah t'chohona. We learn from that that only from k'mitzah and onward is something that must be done by the koyinim. All the other steps before that do not have to be done by koyinim. Okay, so you have like this. Again, you have the flour and the oil are placed in a keli, mixed together. You have, in some cases, baked or fried, depending on the type of mincha. Then you bring it to the kohenim. The first thing they do with it is hagosha. They touch it to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach. Then after that, they do k'mitzah. So we're saying it's mitzvah ve'elach and with some menachos also with the risk, they touch the container the kli shartis containing the mincha, they touch it to the corner of the mizbeach, like so to speak, they're presenting it to Hashem. Then he takes kmitzah and continues from there. So from kmitzah and onward, we learn from the way the pasuk phrases it that he puts the oil puts the levona, then he brings it to the kohenim and they do kmitzah. We learn from that that only kmitzah and onward is mitzvah kohenim must be done by kohenim. Limit are you sick or blilish, say in bizarre. So, we see from that, and this part everybody agrees to, that the pouring of the oil and mixing it with the flour can be done by a zara. Everybody agrees to that, Rabbi Yochanan also. So Rabbi Shlokesh says, in that case, we derive from that. Into the flour, yeah. Yeah, we'll learn later on in the steps of the exact procedures, but yeah. So, the Shlokesh says, given that we see from that, and that's something everybody agrees to that limit, since we see that it doesn't require kohen to do the mixing and the pouring, so therefore it doesn't have to be done inside the azara either. If you see, that's nice. Azara can do it, so therefore it can... No, so that's the thing. In other words, azara could do it inside the azara, but Rosh Lakish is saying, even if it's done outside the azara, it's also okay.
And the question being asked in reverse, is it proper for kohen to do it in the azara?
The proper thing is that it should be done in the azara. Even Rosh Lakish should read the fact. But we're saying that, no, the thing, the stick and glue don't necessarily have to be done, by Cohen. We're saying that if he does, fine, Cohen does it, so much the better, fine, but it's not like it's required. Tosfos has a few different discussions on this. One of them is that it means, in other words, we're saying, so now what happens, in order for it to become a mincha, in order for it to become Kaddish, it has to have been placed in a Svi Shoris. That means it was inside the Azara. So now we're talking about that flour was placed in a Svi Shoris inside the Azara and measured. Then it's taken out of the Azara, and we're talking about doing the mixing of the oil, and now bringing it back in. The implication is that taking it out doesn't make it possible. Rabbi Yochanan has a problem with mixing it outside the Azara, but not with taking it out of the Azara per se.
Bring it back in.
Because you were saying that you can bring it back in. In other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you had taken it out, then brought it back in, and then you did the mixing inside the Azara, Rabbi Yochanan would refine with that. So we see from that, Tosfos says that therefore that just because it was placed in a Svi Shoris doesn't mean that it becomes kosher b'yotzi. That it does become kosher with other things. For example, a tvul yoyim touches it, or left overnight, etc. But yotzi not. Then Tosfos also discusses when we say mitzvah elach mitzvah kohona. Now, actually, again, the hagosha is supposed to be done by a kohen also. The tnufa, you have a couple of types of mincha that also require tnufa, that require waving. The mincha of the soita, the kohen and the woman together hold it and do tenufa. Also the mincha of the omer. Those have to be done by kohenim also. The poster says primarily we're talking about over here about the avoider, about the four avoiders, and kmitzah is the first one of them. The four avoiders to where machshava applies, where chutzos manet, chutzos mekoma, whatever applies. Kmitzah is the first of them.
And that
has to be done by a kohen. The implication is that the previous ones don't have to be done by a kohen. And again, therefore, Rosh Lakish says, if they don't have to be done by a kohen, they don't have to be done inside either. Now, Tosfos asks one more question, which is, you could answer that, what about shita? You're a zor can shech the carbon, but it can't be done outside the azara. So there you have a counter proof. The answer is, though, it's fine. But on the other hand, first of all, Tosfos says, the difference is that the reason why is because the shita, the next stage after it is Kabbalah. The next stage after it is Kabbalah, which you need to be able to receive the blood. That definitely has to be done inside the Azara. Therefore, the Shchit has to be done inside the Azara also. Or, Tosfos says, another reason, a korban that involves blood, it has a higher level of Kedusha than one that doesn't. It is one of the four avoiders, that's true.
When
they do the Kmitzah, that's also true, right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The shita is
a higher form of avoda, but also, Eliyahu has a valid point also, which is the fact is shita is one of the four avoda where it can be possible by machshava, yistika and lila mixing in the oil and pouring in the oil and mixing it or not. So yeah, there's that consideration also. Fine. Anyway. Okay. So that's what Rosh Lakish is saying, that since everybody agrees that the stick and glula don't require a kohen, therefore I say they don't require to be in the azara. T- Primarily, the Yisrael's area of the Azorah is the 11 Amos beginning from Shar Nikanor and extending westward. You have the eastern wall of the Azorah, where you have on the other side of that wall of 15 steps going down to Ezra's Meshin. In that wall, you have Shar Nikanor. You have an 11 Amos wide strip, the length of the Azorah, the width of the Azorah is 135 Amos. You have 11 Amos, so the length of it are the Mokum Judith Ragli Yisrael. That's the area where Yisrael can go freely. From there, you can see the Mizeach. Yeah, the Mizeach then you have the 11 Amos wide strip for the Kohanim, and then you have, 22 Amos from there to the Mizeach. So yeah, it's a distance of 30 some Amos from the edge of the Ezra Yisrael to the Mizeach. But yeah, it's easily, you see it a little bit. Relatively speaking, yeah. Actually, I take that back, rather. What you have is, how do you have it? You have 11 Amos for the Yisrael, 11 Amos for the Kohanim, and then right there begins the Mizeach. So, the point is, it's close enough that he can see, but yeah. I mean, Yisrael is sometimes able to go into the Ezra's Kohanim, into the next 11 Amos wide strip, when he needs to, for example, for Smicha, or for Tznufa, or whatever, but normally they stay within their 11 Amos wide strip. Okay. Onward. So that's Rosh Lakish. Rav Yochanan Amar Ptula, Rav Yochanan says, no, it's possible, because given the after Yosef Eklihu, since the mincha has to be prepared in a Kli Sharis, so the mixing has to be, the oil has to be done in a Kli Sharis, Nihi de Kohuna Leboya, fine, granted it doesn't have to be done by a Kohen, Pnim Yes Boya, nevertheless, it still has to be done inside the Azara, because it involves a Kli Sharis. And then Kli Sharis don't work outside the Azara. The Gemara says, Tanya Kavasei. No, nothing. You don't have to do anything to it specifically, but it can't be Makadish anything outside the Azara. Okay, Tanya Kavasei de Rav Yechanan. We learn a Braise in accordance with Rav Yechanan. Bola lo Zor Kshera. If a Zor mixes in the oil, then it's kosher, because we said only for Kshera and on. It's Mitzvah Kahuna. But Chut Bechoy Mitzvah Azara Stola. But if it's done outside the wall of the Azara, then it's kosher. Finished. Okay. Itmar. Now we have another discussion. Mincha shechosra kodem k'mitzah. Suppose you have now, so again, you start by bringing an isorin of flour for a mincha, and it's mixed with oil, and you have lavoyim put on top of it. Now what happens if some part of that, which we discussed this briefly before, now we're going to discuss more. So what happens if some of that isorin goes missing before the kohen does the k'mitzah? Rav Yechanan Amar Yavi Mitzah. And now everybody agrees you can't bring the mincha as it is. A mincha has to be a complete isorin. But can you fix it up? Rav Yechanan Amar Yavi Mitzah Beisei V'Imamena. Rav Yechanan says, fine, all you have to do is bring more flour, refill the container until you have an isorin again, and then you can continue from there. Rish Lakish Amar Lo Yavi Mitzah Beisei V'Imamena. Rish Lakish says, you can't do that, that's it, the mincha is possible. Rav Yechanan Amar Maybe Mitzah Beisei V'Imamena. Rav Yechanan says, you can bring new flour and refill it, because he says, Kmitza Kavale. Because he says, only when they take the koimet does it become nikva that now it's a mincha. Now, Rashi explains like this. Now, we've learned before, as soon as you put the flour into the klisharis, we said before, we had Rav saying before, and Shmuel agreeing, that as soon as you put the flour into the klisharis, it becomes kodesh, kodesh, tagut. Fine, but what we mean over here, Rashi says, is, kviyus, in the sense that now, that once you have all the components placed together, then they're all interdependent. Then you can't take one of them out and replace it with another one. So Rav Yochanan says, at what point does that kviyus happen? Only when you take the koimet. So if after you took the koimet, some of it went missing, then you would have a problem. Then you can't refill it. But before the kmitza is taken, it's not yet considered a mincha in that sense. It has traditions like, oh, sure, but it's not yet considered a mincha. It's not yet kavua as a mincha. Therefore, you can refill it. Rish Lakish on the law yavi mitzvah they say in Malana, where Rish Lakish says you can't, because he says kedushas kli kavale. He says as soon as you put it in the keli, it now becomes a kriya. It now becomes that all the parts are interdependent, and now if some part of it is missing, you can't replace it. No, when we say yavi mitzvah they say, it's the same thing whether you work from his house or from the Beis Mikdash. The point is that it's too late. You have to have an isorin over there. Once the holy isorin was placed in the kli sharis, together and mixed with the oil and with the lavoina on top, then that's it. Rish Lakish is saying, now the kviyus happened, it now officially becomes a mincha, and if any part of it is missing, too bad. It's possible. Okay, Eitvei, Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Shimon, Lakish. So Rabbi Yechanan, wait. Rabbi Yechanan asks the Shlakish, what are you talking about, saying that if some of it is missing, you can't replace it? We learn in a Mishnah in Negoyim, in connection with the Masorah, in connection with the log of oil that the Masorah brings as part of his Korbanos. The Mishnah says there, Chosra log, if some of the log is missing, Im Ad Shel Yosak, and this happened before the Kohen poured some of it on his left hand, meaning, in other words, again, the process begins that the Kohen takes the container of oil, the log is placed into the log of oil is poured into a Kli Shari, and that's what gives it to Shel Yosak. And now the Kohen starts by taking that keli and pouring some of the oil onto his left hand, and that's where he does the seven sprinklings and then puts on the Masorah's ear, thumb, and toe. So if some of the oil spilled from out of the container before he started this process, then fine, Yimalenu, then you refill it. So therefore, the same thing should apply to a mincha, that if some of it is missing, you can refill it. You're right. You have a contradiction against your shlokish, and that's it. I mean, usually, anyway, the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan against your shlokish. That seems to be cases, but in any case here, since we slugged up your shlokish, then that's it.
If some oil spills,
yeah, but then you refill it. Yeah, before he does your stick, then you refill it. Yeah. Okay. Choice to ask the question. Yeah, no, you stick it as he pours it into his hand, and then uses his hand sort of as a cliche charlotte. He dips his right index finger into his left hand, and then he does, yeah. Turns to ask the question, this is a Mishnah. How does Rish Lakish not know a Mishnah? Panoim is supposed to know all the Mishnahs. The Turns just leaves it as a question. Some of the Achronim, I think, says that maybe Rish Lakish could have answered that not necessarily is a mincha and the oil the same thing. You could say the oil is one thing, you can refill it. A mincha is not necessarily the same thing. We'll learn later on. Sukkim about a mincha, about some of it being missing. We don't have such sukkim as far as the oil. So therefore, Rish Lakish could have said that that's a distinction. Yet some of the other Achronim say that actually, even though officially the Amoraim was supposed to be familiar with all the Mishnayot, nevertheless, we find in some places that they were less familiar with Seder Taharos than other parts of Shas. The Seder Taharos, most of it is not applicable nowadays after the Korban. So therefore, it could be it's Mishnah and Negoyim. It's possible that Rish Lakish hadn't thought of it. So now we have another discussion. Shirayim Shachosu ben Kmitza Lachtala. So before we talked about there, you have the whole Mincha, the whole Isarin, and some of it. Some of it went missing before you did the k'misa. Now we're talking about you did the k'misa, and now some of the shirayim that are left over are missing. Now what? Rav Yerushalayim on the master between the k'misa and the akhtara, the burning of that k'mis on the mizeah. Again, remember you have four avodas involving a mincha, just like you have four avodas involving an animal korban. You have k'misa, you have hodlacha, walking it over, you have k'misa, you have matan the kli, you place that k'mis into another kli sharis. Then you walk with that Kli Sharis over to the Mizeah, Kholofa, and then you take the Kohenis out of the Keli and throw it onto the fire, and then burn it. That's Akhtara.
Why do you call that fire?
Because Akhtara means burning, it means making it smoke. Kitter means smoke. Beginning all the Kitter, all the Kitter, and Kitter. Okay. So now what you have is, so the Kohen took that Isorin, took that Mimpa, took a Kohenis of it, fine, all good, before he had a chance to take and burn that Kohenis on the Mizeah, some of the Shirayim of the Mincha, some of what's left over in the Keli, got lost. Now what? Not the Kohenis itself, but the Shirayim, the leftover, which normally the Kohenim are going to. Rav Yerushalayim on the Makdash Kohenis Aleihem, Rav Yerushalayim says, that's fine, you can still go offer the Ketores on the Mizeah, on behalf of the Shirayim. We'll discuss later whether you can eat the Shirayim or not, but at any rate, Rav Yerushalayim is saying, you can offer that Kohenis on the Mizeah. The Kohenis itself is still functional. But Rish Lakish on the end mark with Kohenis Aleihem, Rish Lakish said you can't. Okay, so the Gemara points out, now we're going to have a Machlokas later on in Arma Sefta about this question of what happens if the shirayim of a mincha become possible or lost or what have you. We're going to have a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about that. So the Gemara is going to discuss how that relates to this machlokas of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yeshua. So I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer. According to, within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, who says that within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, who says that even if the shirayim of the mincha are lost, then the mincha is still kosher. Kulam like tigi, then there's no question, there's no machlok. That's because if even the whole mincha, the whole shirayim are missing or burnt or what have you, and still Rabbi Eliezer says it's kosher. How much more so if only a little bit of it is missing? Tigi, I'm leaving the Rabbi Yeshua. The machlok of Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish is within Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Within Rabbi Eliezer, they would have to agree. Rabbi Eliezer would definitely say that if some of the shirayim are missing, no problem. Because he says even if all the shirayim are missing, no problem. The question would be within Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says if all the shirayim are missing, then it's no good. Would he say the same thing as part? So that's part of the shirayim. No. So Vitchinan, we learn in a Mishnah later on in Arma Sector. Nitmu shireha, if all of the shirayim of the mincha become tamei. Or nitrifu shira, or all of the shirayim were burnt, or avdu shira, or all of the shirayim were lost. Kemidas Rabbi Eliezer kshera. If we follow the logic of Rabbi Eliezer, then we will say it's kosher. The logic of Rabbi Eliezer is in a different context. In Sachim, Rabbi Eliezer says like this. We learned this in Zachim as well. Suppose you have. Let's set aside a mincha a second and talk about an animal korban. An animal korban, we know that you have the blood goes on the mizbeach. You're supposed to have also the emurim go on the mizbeach, but that's not necessary for the validity of the korban. Once the blood is sprinkled properly on the mizbeach, then the korban is purta. The korban is acceptable. And then you have, with most korbanos, then you have the meat is eaten by the kohenim or by the owner or whatever. What happens if the blood is available to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, but the meat of the korban becomes, again, lost or burnt or tameh or what have you, and can't be eaten anymore. Can you sprinkle that blood? Rabbi Eliezer said yes. Rabbi Yeshua says no. So, if we follow Rabbi Eliezer, the blood hasn't been sprinkled on the mizbeach yet. So now the question is, can you sprinkle it even though the meat became tameh or otherwise unavailable? Rabbi Eliezer says that's fine, the blood can still be sprinkled, we don't care what happens to the meat. Rabbi Yeshua says no, if the meat is gone, then that's it, you can't sprinkle the blood. And you know, he learns from the Pasuk, that it means you have to have Boser and Dom together, yeah. Okay, so if we follow Rabbi Eliezer's logic in the case of a Kurban, then we'll say the same thing with a Mincha, the same thing, because the Koymus of a Mincha corresponds to the Dom of a Kurban. So therefore, even if the Shirayim are all gone, no problem, you can be makir of that Koymus. So therefore, can be just Rabbi Eliezer's kshera. So according to the following Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, when it comes to a korban, then the same thing would be the mincha is kosher. We didn't say that. We said Rabbi Eliezer, the Amora. We're talking about Rabbi Eliezer. Okay. Can be just Rabbi Yeshua Stula. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua, following his logic, would say it's possible. The same way as he says by an animal korban, you need the boser to be available in order to sprinkle the dam. The same thing he'll say over here. You need the shirayim available in order to burn the korban. Man de posel, so Rabbi Yechanan, it's a Rish Lakish rather, who says that in the case of the mincha it's posel, even if only some of it is missing, he says, Rabbi Yeshua. Same thing as Rabbi Yeshua says. Same thing as Rabbi Yeshua would have a problem if all of the mincha is gone. He would also have a problem if some of it is gone. Man de machsher, where's Rabbi Yechanan, who holds that it's kosher, he would say, Ad kan my omer Rabbi Yeshua hosem elevalei shtayer. Fine, but you know what? Rabbi Yeshua is only talking about over there if you have nothing at all left over. But if you have some of it left over, then even Rabbi Yeshua agrees, as long as you have a tzayis, as long as you have a tzayis of the meat or of the emurim left over, then you can sprinkle the blood. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yeshua. Again, we had Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. But even Rabbi Yeshua is going to, no, okay, so again, we're saying Rish Lakish is saying the same way as Rabbi Yeshua passels if the whole mincha is, if the whole shirayim is missing, the same way he's going to passel if some of it is missing. Therefore, no koymus. Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, Rabbi Yeshua is only talking about when the whole thing is missing, not when only part of it is missing. Netanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yeshua, kol az brachim sheba Torah sh'nishtayim mehem kezayis bosa oi kezayis chelev, with any korban in the Torah, if you have left at least a kezayis of meat or a kezayis of chelev that wasn't destroyed or tameh or what have you, zorek hadam, then fine, you can still sprinkle the blood on behalf of that one kezayis. But kezayis bosa, kezayis chelev, if you only have left a half kezayis of meat and a half kezayis of chelev, ene zorek hadam, then you can't sprinkle the blood. Because the eating that people do and the eating that the Mizbeach does, the consuming of the Chelev, don't combine together. So therefore, you have no reason for the zikah. Over ola, on the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, when it comes to an ola, that's different. Afilu kachatizayis basa, kachatizayis chelev. Even if all you have left is a half kachatizayis of meat and a half kachatizayis of chelev, zorikas adam, you can go ahead and sprinkle the blood, mitnesh ba'ola, kola kola, because by an ola, anyway, the whole thing is burnt up in the back. Over mincha, but then he continues, when it comes to a mincha, afafisha kola kayemet, even if the whole thing is still intact, lo yizrek, you shouldn't be sprinkling the blood. What do you mean? We're just sprinkling blood coming with a mincha. That's the mincha, maya vidya. How does a mincha come in over here? There's no drisha when it comes to a mincha. The answer is, Amar Rapapa, mincha tesafer. Rapapa says, the mincha that we mean over here is a mincha tesafer that comes along with a korban. You have, for example, let's say an ola, had and a shlomim, various korbanos, come along with a mincha tesafer. The point is, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, what happens if, let's say, so now you have, let's say, an ola. The entire basar and chaylev is gone. The entire basar and chaylev is tamei or lost or what happened. We're saying therefore, Rabbi Yeshua, less than a kazayis of Israel. Rabbi Yeshua is saying you can't sprinkle the blood. The point is, even though you have the entire minchas nesachim left, you still can't sprinkle the blood for that curve. Because you would think, talk it out of Hamina, now you would think to say not. Yeah. After all, the minchas nesachim are meant to come together with the curve. So maybe it should be considered like the actual korban itself, and therefore, as long as you have the minchas nesachim, or at least the kazayis of it left, then it should be okay to sprinkle the blood. Kamash Malan, that is what Rabbi Yeshua wants to point out. But no, you have to have a kazayis basar or kazayis chelav of the actual korban itself, not of the minchas nesachim that goes along with it. So that's what he means. That even if the mincha is intact, lo yizrek, you don't sprinkle the blood of the korban if the whole basar and or chelav of the korban is gone. Fine. So that's Rabbi Yeshua. So the point is, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan says, again, you see Rabbi Yeshua himself distinguishes between whether the whole thing is missing or part of it is missing. Same thing by Mincha. There should be a difference whether the whole Shilayim is missing or part of it is missing. No, regular Mincha. Regular Mincha. We were talking about a Koymus. So Mincha Sesachim, you don't take, you know, Mincha Sesachim, you don't take a Koymus. So Mincha Sesachim, you burn the whole thing on the Mizbeach. Okay.
Mincha Sesachim, the Mincha you bring with a Koymus?
Yes.
And so you bring the carbon, you shed the carbon.
You shed the carbon, you sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach. Right. Then you have the emurim are burnt on the mizbeach, and in the case of the oil of the whole thing. And you also have, along with it, come the mincha of flour and oil mixed together, and also a certain amount of wine. And all of those are burnt or poured, respectively, on the mizbeach.
After you finish
with the carbon? No, they're done together with the pieces of the carbon. Well, we did that too. We learned that you can bring them even as much as 10 days later, but usually it would be done together with the korban, right? The Mishnah in Yuma, for example, mentions that, let's say, for example, you have the korban chomid every day came together with nesachim. So the Mishnah describes over there that, for example, you had one of the piyosis that they do, and then in the morning to see which korinim are going to do which avodah, they'd pick 13 korinim for the avodah of the chomid. One of them is going to shecht it, one of them is going to sprinkle the blood, etc. And then you have nine or eleven of them, I think, are going to be carrying the various pieces of the korban as well as the nesachim to the mizbeach. And then it goes on to say that when a ram is being brought which has a larger amount than the nesachim, then you need 11 koyanim to carry all the pieces plus the nesachim. When you have a bull, then you need 24. The point is, you always have among the list of koyanim, among the koyanim who are listed are there that bring the different parts, you have one or two or three or whatever it is koyanim that carry the bowl with the mincha and the bowl with the wine. Yeah. The mincha is talking, yeah. Okay, so far that explains Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, again, since we see Rabbi Yeshua distinguishes between part and all of the korban, same thing, he would distinguish between part and all of the shirayim. Okay, uman de posel, what would Rish Lakish, who says that it's posel, if any part of the shirayim I'm missing, what's he going to answer to that? You would say shiny hocha, yes, but it's different in the case of a mincha. The pasuk says that the kohen should lift up from the mincha its azkara, meaning its kohenet, the hikser on the mizbecha, and he should offer it and he should burn it on the mizbeach. So the word hamincha implies ad de isa lakola, that it only works if the whole mincha, ad de isa lakola mincha, lo yaster, means that unless the whole mincha is still intact, you can't be burning that kohenet. because he says otherwise you don't need the extra word on mincha. We know we're talking about the mincha over there. So it's Kurt just said, so I say, hinam mincha implies the mincha has to be, it has to, the whole shirayim has to be intact. The idach. So in other words, basically what he's saying is, it's not, even though we were saying before that at least according to Rabbi Yeshua, you would say that there is, that a mincha and a korban are similar, the same way as according to Rabbi Yochanan, he was saying, the same way as Rabbi Yeshua would say, well, actually the Mishnah, they said the Mishnah later on says that we equate the mincha to the korban, and we say the same way as if the korban, if the whole basar and chaylev are missing, Rabbi Yeshua says you don't sprinkle the blood, the same thing if the whole shirayim are missing, Rish Lakish is going to say, fine, but on the other hand, when it comes to part of it being missing, then we don't say that, it's not the same thing. Which leads to the question in that case, then why are we saying, we said before, that Rish Lakish is necessarily having to go according to Rabbi Yeshua, so the Shita Mokabeth has asked why, based on this. You could just as well say that he's going according to Rabbi Eliezer. You could say that there's a difference between a Mincha and a Zema. So one of the Achronim, I think Karen Ora answers, the difference is, with a Korban, there's no specific size of a Korban. You can have a larger Korban, you can have a smaller Korban. So therefore, it's not, you can't really distinguish between part versus all of the chaylev and the dam being left over. Whereas when it comes to a mincha is an exact amount. When you start it, no more. You can have a larger, a 60th grain in, but yeah. The point is that you have a certain minimum amount as opposed to a korban. Therefore, Rish Lakish can be saying that when it comes to a mincha, the pasuk is implying you have to have that entire isarin minus the korban complete in order to be matched with the korban. As opposed to, well, there is that, fine, but it doesn't have to be a certain minimum size. There's different animals come in different sizes. Okay. Fine. The idach, what would Rabbi Yochanan answer to that? He would say, fine, I agree it says minam mincha, but that means mincha shahoy sekbar. That means as long as it was a valid mincha before, which fine, at the time of the kmitta, it was a valid mincha because you had a complete isaron over there, then we don't care if some of it went missing afterwards.
Initially,
right. Okay, so now Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, I have a contradiction to you. You're telling me that if any part of the mincha is missing, you can't offer the korban. Now, we've learned before that when it comes to the lechem afanim, the levona functions as a korban. So that's the two spoonfuls of levona that are on the shulchan together with it function as the equivalent of a korban. You burn them on the mizbeach, and then after that, the lechem afanim themselves are the shirayim, and the kohenim divide them up among themselves and eat. So, we learned in a braisa, if before you started taking the table setting apart, meaning that you took off, so again, you have the normal process is, you take the lechem afanim and the bazifin off the shulchan, or first you take the bazifin off, You burn them on the mizbeach, then you take the lachem afanim and distribute it among the kohenim. The spoons of tzaras, right? So if before you took apart, if the bread got broken, if any one or more of the lachem afanim got broken before you took the bazichin off the table, nifras lachma, then the bread got broken. Halachem posel, when the bread is posel, the ein makir olav of the bazichin, and you cannot offer the bazichin on its behalf, as the equivalent of a mincha that's missing something. The imnishapurka nifras lachma, but if the bread only broke after you took off the bazichin, but before you offered them on the mizbeach, halachem posel, the bread is still posel, the kohenim can't eat it, but umakir olav of the bazichin, but you could offer the bazichin on its behalf. In other words, again, this should be the equivalent of that you took the kmitta, but you didn't yet burn it. And we're saying that you can offer the bazichin. And the Omer of Elazar, and in fact, and Rabbi Elazar said, loy perka mamash, it doesn't even have to mean that he actually took the bazichin off, el akivin shir hugiyas manu lisra, once the time comes, 6 hours into the day, when it's time to take them off, the apophishal exigit, so even if you didn't take them off yet, it's considered as if they were. So the question is again, so we see there, you have the example where you took the koimet, and you took the koimet off, and we're saying you can be macro of it, even though the bread broke afterwards, which means that some of it is missing. So that works according to the Vietnam, that doesn't work according to the Shlokish. Rashi, by the way, says that there's no particular reason to bring in what Rabbi Elazar is saying over here, just simply mention the Braisa before we mention Rabbi Elazar's statement on it, then we're mentioning it again also over here. The Chidushim HaMiyachosim LaRashba says no, actually. The Gemara is mentioning Rabbi Elazar's statement to make a point that Rabbi Yochanan is sharpening the question. you see that not only here where you actually took off the position, even you could have taken off the position even though you didn't yet, then already it's considered as if you did. How much more so with a mincha that you actually took the permits out of? Okay. Amalei, Sarish Lakish answers, very simple. Hamani Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, that braita could be a coincidence of Rabbi Eliezer. We said before, Rabbi Eliezer would say in the case of an animal korban, even if all the chaylev and all the boster is missing, you can still sprinkle the blood. The same way, Rabbi Eliezer would, he said the same thing Rabbi Eliezer would say as far as a mincha. Even if the whole shirayim is missing, you can still offer the kindness. Very well. Even if some of the bread is broken, you can still be makri, you can still be makri, there's a kindness. Fine. A Malay, Rabbi Yechanan says, that doesn't work. I know I'm minalach mishnah shleima. I'm telling you a complete braita, meaning a stam mishnah. I'm actually using the expression stam mishnah, even though apparently this isn't a mishnah, it seems to be a braita. But nevertheless, okay, it's a stam braita. We don't have any reason to think that's only a coincidence of one opinion. But I'm just the after of the other. And you're telling me it's only a coincidence of the other? And you have to ask, anyway, even if you're going to argue that, fine, okay, a stam braita could be a coincidence of one tana, but then the wording isn't right. Ear of the other, if you're going to say that it's always a coincidence of the other, my ear, you're nifra. Then why do you have to mention just the case where the bread broke? I feel it's sort of over Nami Masha. Rabbi Eliezer, after all, would say, even if all the lachem upon him was burned, even if all of it was lost, why mention the case where some of it was broken?
Wait, if it's broken, you put in furry, but
you cover some of it burned, or... No. Because we're saying, especially in the second case, we're saying over here, we're master all of us in the position. Fine, in the ratio you could say maybe it's a chiddush to say nifras, because you could say there's a chiddush from Hamichas and Marashka talk about this, but yeah. Yeah, you could say in the ratio, fine. You could say nifras because you want to say chiddush, even though the bread was only broken, not actually lost. Nevertheless, because it happened before the position are taken off, then you can't be master of the position. But in the sefer, it should have used the expression where it was burnt or lost or what have you, and saying even then you can be master of the position. How much more so if it was only broken? So why mention? Okay, ishtik. So Rish Lakish was quiet to that. Which either could mean that he didn't have an answer, either it could mean that he didn't have an answer, or it could mean that he disagreed with the premise of the question. There's a place in the Gemara. There's a Gemara in Beisa, for example, that mentions that they add that the Rav said a certain din in connection with Hilchos Yom Tov, and they asked him about it. So they asked him what's the difference between this and another case, and the Gemara says ishtik, that Rav was quiet and didn't answer, and actually, a number of the Rishonim nevertheless asked him like Rav. This is brought in Chassidus in a number of places, with the idea being that sometimes you have a person is convinced of is certain of their position. They know for a fact their position is correct, but you challenge them on it. They can't find the words. They can't bring it from Chochma into Bina to be able to express it in words why they feel this way, why they consider that not to be a substantive challenge, but nevertheless they don't change their opinion. So here, it could be the same thing. It's the same thing over here with Rish Lakish. It doesn't have to be that he changed his mind. It could be that he couldn't think of a way to express an answer, but nevertheless he still held that the question isn't valid. Okay. However, the Gemara asked by my shotback, fine, but still you could ask why was Rish Lakish quiet? He could have found a very obvious answer. Lamele Sibur Shani, let him answer very simple. There's a difference between a korban of a yachid and a sibur. Because once you find by a korban of the sibur where tuma is allowed, where you bring korban a sibur, tuma chuyav a sibur, hutra a sibur, whatever, the point is they can bring them even if the koyanim or the korbanis or whatever are chavei, ishtri nami chaseris. So you could argue by the same logic, fine, you could say when it comes to lechem aponim, which belongs to the sibur, then fine, we're going to allow if part of the mincha is missing. But we wouldn't say that's the same thing with a private person's mincha. The answer is because we can say there's a difference between a yachid and a sibur. The same way as you find the difference as far as tumah, you'd find the difference as far as chaser. Okay, so since Rish Lakish did not answer that, since he didn't answer there's a difference between a yachid and a sibur, that shows us hachistorin kabal mumdom, that something missing from the mincha is the equivalent of it being a bal mum. And you don't find a bal mum is not most of the sibur. Tumah fine is most of the sibur, but not when Balmum. The ain't Balmum but sibur, yeah. There's no Balmum when it comes to the sibur. So that's why Rish Lakish can't answer there's a difference between the yachid and the sibur, because that would be the equivalent of saying that a Balmum would be most of it. Okay.
Which is not
good. Okay. Yosef Rav Papa v'ka'amu lo hashmaita. Okay, so one time Rav Papa was sitting over and saying this discussion. Rashi says it doesn't necessarily mean he was staying over the whole discussion. That Rashi, Rashi learns that he was saying over just this last part that we're saying over here, that we said that Rish Lakish did not answer that there's a difference between Yochid and Sivir because Chasera is like a Baal Mum. And on that, Omele Rav Yosef Farshmaya v'Rapapa. So Rav Yosef Farshmaya says to Rapapa, why? That means the assumption that we were making for this purpose, the fact that Rav Abba Ava is saying that, the fact that we were asking that the Shlokish could have answered Yochid versus Sivir, and we're answering he couldn't have because Chisorin is like a Baal Mum, why don't we say, Milo Yaskin and Rav Yosef and Rav Shlokish for Minchasa Omer de Sivir? After all, can't we say that Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish are not necessarily only arguing about a mincha of a yachid? They could be arguing also about the mincha ta'omer, which is brought by the sibur. And nevertheless, we would still say that they argue. So you can't say, in other words, it's necessarily a difference of yachid versus sibur, and then you can answer fine, but it's Baal Mum, and Baal Mum doesn't apply to that. You could very easily answer that you see, even by a mincha sibur, that Rav Yechon, namely the Omer, that Rish Lakish and Rav Yechon argue the same argument that some of it is missing. So you could say, therefore, you could say that Rav Yechon's question from the Lachan Aponim was a very valid one, because that's also a carbon sibur. So you don't need to say, therefore, in other words, that Chasera is like a Baal Mum. You could say, because after all, then you'd have to explain Rav Yechon why Rav Yechon saying the thing is kosher in that case. You could say very simply that they are in fact arguing about a korban sibur as well, and therefore Rav Yechonan asks on the Shlokish, what are you telling me then when you have a braita that tells us about the lechem upon him, it works. So then by the korban omer, it should also work. And therefore, so therefore, when we say that, because the lechem upon him is also a korban sibur, it's also a korban sibur, so I'm sure. And that would explain why the Shlokish was quiet without us needing to bring in the whole thing about them. Omer of Malkiah. Okay. So now Rav Malkiah says, okay, but now I have a braisa that seems to contradict what Rav Yochanan said. He said Rav Yochanan says that if some of the mincha went missing after the kmitza, then it's okay. You can still burn the kmitz on the mizbeach. But we learn a braisa. We have braisas as follows. Tana Choda, we have one braisa that says as follows. Me stolter, when the pasuk says that the Kohen takes the kmitza from its solus and from its, and so the expression of the pasuk is kama sakhani mena, me stolter or me shamna. He takes the Kohen from its solus and from its solus and from its shamna. From me stolter, and we know already it consists of solus and shamna because it said so in the previous pasuk. From misolta, we learn from the word misolta, shem chasra kol shuv sula, we learn from that that if any of the solus is missing, then it's possible. Misolta from its solus, yeah, meaning it was an absolute, it's complete amount of solus, right. And when it says mishamma, means shem chasra kol shuv possible, the same thing when it says from its oil, meaning if any of the oil is missing, then it's also possible. We're going to learn later on that you have a minimum amount. You have every mincha has to be at least in sardin of flour, and every mincha has to be at least one lug of oil. So I think it's a lug anyway. Maybe it's a rebeach. I don't remember. We'll learn later on, but whatever it is. What? I think it's a lug, but maybe, I don't remember actually. Whatever it is, there's a certain minimum amount of oil that has to go into a kohen mincha. The point is, if you have any less than that, then it's possible. Okay, that's one braisa. V'tanya igach, then we have another braisa. When the pasuk says, later on, it says that the kohenim eat the leftover part of the mincha, the shirayim, it says, v'haniseres min ha-mincha, it says, what's left over from the mincha, the kohenim eat, meaning, kraf l'mincha, shechotrihi, that comes to exclude the case where the mincha is missing something, the shechotah kumta, or if the kohenim is missing something, v'shaloi hiktim l'vinasasum, and also the case where you didn't offer any of the Levona from it on the Mizbeach. So in other words, we have two different stukim. We have the word Misolta and Mishamna, and we have Vaniseres min ha-mincha. So the Malkiah asks, Shrei Kroi b'chaseres lomali. Now why should we need two stukim to tell us the same thing, that if the mincha is missing something, then it's possible? Lav chav la mincha shechos rakodim k'mitzah. Shouldn't it be that one of them teaches us the case where the mincha is missing something before the k'mitzah? V'chav the shirayim shechos rakodim k'mitzah laksada. The other for where some of it went missing after the k'mitzah, before the kodim k'mitzah. Utsiyuf the Rav Yechon and the Tavayim. In that case, and he contradicted Rav Yechon on both dinim. He said in the case of the first din, you can refill the keli if it was missing before the kodim. And in the second case, you can be master of the kodim. But it seems from these brises that we just brought, the fact that we have to have two different psukim is in both cases is possible, and there's no going back on it.
One
before and one after. That sounds like there's logic. Yeah? The answer is loy. No. You don't have to understand the two brises and the two psukim to be talking about those cases. No. Chav l'mincha shechos rakodim k'mitzah. Fine. One of them is talking about where some of the mincha went missing before the kodim was taken. But the point of the pasuk and of the braisa, what do we mean when we say the mincha is possible? What that point means, the imedi mi beis evi malena, if he brings some extra flour to refill it, to refill the missing part, then good, then to kosher the mincha again. The iloi loy, but it's not enough. You don't say, in other words, that once, you shouldn't think to say that once he had a holy sorrow and put it in a kli sharet and all, then even if some of it is missing afterwards, no problem, you can take the kremis from it. That first process and the braisa on it are teaching us that no, the only way to make that mincha kosher is by refilling it. So that's one, so that doesn't contradict Rav Yechanan. And v'chav b'shirayim shechosrim ben k'mitza l'akhtara, and the other one teaches us as follows. It's true. It is talking about the case where some of the shirayim went missing after the k'mitza, but before the burning of the k'mitza. But the point of that process and the point of that braisa is that even though Rav Yechanan is saying you can be master of the k'mitza on behalf of it, nevertheless, osim shirayim akhtarim la'achila. Nevertheless, the pasuk Ba'anei Tzeres is teaching us that the shirayim themselves will be also to eat in that case. So Rav Yechanan is saying you can be makir of the kohenet, you can burn the kohenet, meaning, in other words, that the mincha will be kosher, the person will fulfill his obligation, but the kohenet will not be able to eat the shirayim. Why is that? Okay. Because in fact we have a question on that very point. According to Rav Yechanan, who says that if some of the shirayim are missing between k'mitza and aksara, makir k'mitza lehem, he said that you can offer the k'mitza on behalf of that mincha, we have to ask, oisin shirayim mahim ba'achila. Fine, but what would be the din? Are you allowed to eat the shirayim? So therefore we need a pasuk for that. Omer Ze'iri, so Ze'iri says, like this, Omakra, again, we quoted a pasuk Ba'anei Tzeres. We said that a pasuk that says the leftover of the mincha the kohenim eat. The word Ba'anei Tzeres teaches us, Olai Hanei Tzeres min Hanei Tzeres. Not what's left over from what was left over. Like this, you have the shirayim that was left over after you take the kohenim. If now some of that shirayim went missing, then it means what you have left over there is the shirayim of the shirayim. And the pasuk is implying you can't do that. So that's the issue. Rav Yanai says, Mehan mincha, mincha shahoy sekvah. Rav Yanai says, the pasuk says, from the mincha, implying the mincha that was already there. So what does that mean? So Rashi brings two explanations what that means. One explanation is that Rav Yanai is disagreeing with the issue. The Iri had said, as we just said, Rav Yechanan would say, that if some of the shirayim are missing, you can't eat them. If some of the shirayim went missing before Akhtara, you can't eat them. According to the Rashi's first explanation, Rav Yanai is disagreeing with that. He would say, as long as the mincha was intact before the k'nitza, then it's okay, even if some of the shirayim were missing afterward, then you can eat the rest of the mincha. According to Rashi's second explanation, Rav Yanai is not disagreeing with the Iri, he's just bringing a different process to learn the same thing. Because sometimes you have that. So Mashmoris Doshin, Ikabinai, was told. Sometimes you have, the Gemara will say, that two Amoraim don't actually argue, or two Tanoim, don't actually argue on the Din, they just argue where you learn it from. We learned about that in Sanhedrin, actually. We learned in Sanhedrin that you can have a case where two members of Sanhedrin learn the same din from two different stukim, and we say you can't count those as two valid opinions because one of them has to be right, one of them has to be wrong. There's no extra words of stukim in the Torah, and therefore inevitably one of those stukim must be to teach us that din, and the other one is not. So he would be the same. He would be the similar kind of thing. Okay. In fact, some of the Achronim point out. It might be better to understand it that second way that Rashi is saying, because after all, Rabbi Yana is Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe. If we're saying Rabbi Yochanan holds you can't eat the Shirayim, it's more logical to assume he agreed with his Rebbe, Rabbi Yana, rather than to say that Rabbi Yana disagrees with the premise and says that you could eat the Shirayim. Fine. Okay. We learned in the Mishnah, come up this Marachola, we said in the Mishnah that if he did the Knissa, that if the Kohen did the Knissa with his left hand, then we said it's possible. We had Ben Bethera saying that you can return it to the Keli and then take it with the right hand again, with the whole detail of how you put it back into the Keli exactly, but whatever. The Tanakhama had said that if you do Knissa with the left hand, it's possible. So, Menohanim, where do we know that from? That if he does Knissa with his left hand, it's possible. Like the Omer cross, and you have a process like this in connection with the Korbanos of the Miluim. It says by Yakriv or something. Okay, it says Aaron brought close to Mincha by Yamale Kafay Mimena, and he filled up his hand from it and offered that handful on the Mizeach, which is the Kmitza, of course. Usually the expression is Bekama Kafay Mimena Malay Kum. So here it uses the expression Kafay, his hand. Well, Kaf the Enya Demau. Well, when it says Kafay, what does it mean? Does it mean his right hand or does it mean his left hand? On the face of it, maybe it's the meaning of the hand. Yes, how do we know it means that one hand? When you have later on in Parashas Mitzvah, when it mentions that the Kohen takes from the oil, again, the log of oil that the Mitzvah brings, and pours some of it onto his left hand, and then he dips his right finger in it, and then does the hazos and everything. Since it says over there, kapakoyin asmolis means can smolis. Means only in that case does the word kaf mean the left hand. How kol makam shenema kaf ain el yamin. Meaning, by implication, anywhere else where it says the kaf of the kohen, it means his right hand. So there you go, that's how we know the kmitz has to be done with the right hand. Okay, the question is, b'homin boiler the gufei, what do you mean? You need the word smallest to tell us the actual din that the kohen needs to pour the oil into his left hand. Otherwise, if it didn't say smallest, how would you know how he's supposed to do it? You can't be learning any limudim from that. The answer is smallest achrinim. Okay, but it says smallest again in the next process. After it says that he pours it into kapha koina smallest, then it says he dips his finger of his right hand into the oil that's on his left hand, and he does that well, so it doesn't need to repeat the left hand again, we know already where the oil is. So it must mean that one of them teaches us the basic fact that he has to pour into his left hand, and the other one is teaching us that only over here does cap mean the left hand, and everywhere else it means the right hand. Yeah, because that's twice in back-to-back specimen. Okay. The question is, the aim of Emir... What do you mean the other way around? One of them is a gufay and one of them is a... The question is, the aim of Emir is a hamir to a lulam. Okay, maybe you would say the fact that the Torah is limiting it twice means just the opposite, that you're being marva. You would say that it means just the opposite. It means to be marva, that even, no, maybe the other way around. Lulabos, that when it comes to pouring the oil of the Masurah on his hand, that it would be kosher even if he does it on his right hand. If we only had one time smallest, we would say he's back to the left one. When we have twice that it insists smallest, maybe it means en mir tach amir tach lulabos, and now it means he should do it on his left, but if he did it on his right, it's also good. But still, how do we know then that it means, so how do we know that it means that in other places it means dafke yamin? The answer is smallest achrinim. Fine, but you have a third time it says smallest, because like this, you have the korbanos of a mesorah, you have the korbanos that a mesorah brings if he's rich, and then you have which consists of three animals, and then you have the korbanos that a mesorah brings if he's poor, which consists of one animal and two birds. Like this, he brings an oila, a chatas, and an osham. So the osham has to be an animal regardless, because it's an osham of birds. But the chatas and the oila are animals if he can afford them, and birds if he can. In both cases, the Torah describes the whole procedure of the korbanos of the rich mitzvah, and it mentions this concept that the kohen pours the oil onto his left hand, and then dips his right index finger into his left hand and sprinkles, and then it repeats that same thing again by the onus. So therefore, you have a third time that it's a small distant connection with the Ani now. So therefore, so now we have the, so now it's not any years, not years, not lulabas anymore. It means can smallest be not the smallest. It means again, that means only here does cap mean the less and not anywhere else. Yeah, in fact, we've talked about before, I think the Rashba says an idea, that if you have one meal, if you have two meal, then fine, it's Maya. But when you have three, then you're back to being the Maya. So here we have, so now we're up to three.
Okay. What do you mean Maya for the third time?
The third time we're Maya. Oh, it means, no, so in other words, here we're saying that one, so one of them is with Gufa to tell us it should be on the left hand. A second one is telling us only on the left hand, not on the right hand. And the third one is telling us anywhere else in the Torah where it says the word calf, it means the right hand. Okay, the question is, the Ema Adraba, fine, but you should argue maybe the other way around. Ma kan smolis, afa alma nami smolis, just the opposite. You should learn a binyan adam here, that just like over here where the calf means the left hand, everywhere else in the Torah the word calf should mean the left hand. So Adraba should mean you should have to take the smitha with the left hand, maybe. The answer is abba smolis. So now we're up to, there's actually four times that it says smolis. Shrei ba'ani is shrei ba'asher. It says twice by the ani and twice by the asher. So how are we learning from that? So Rashi brings a number of different explanations how exactly we're using these four times that it says smallest thing. So Rashi starts by saying again, one is legufa to tell us that he needs the four in his left hand. One of them is to tell us that the other two are not for mir tachamir. And then, that you shouldn't say that in order not to learn the binyan av from this, then that's why you have the fourth one. Teach us that only here is it the left, not anywhere else.
One is
l'gufoy, just to tell us that he has the four on his left hand. The next one is telling us that don't think that you have two of them over here and therefore any of your tachamir talurabit. No, it means only the left hand. And then you have two more because you have shnei suma boim ka'echa because then you have two psukim teaching us the same thing. And we know as a general rule you don't use those for a binyan av. You don't learn from those to other places.
How do you know that they don't come?
That says we have a general rule throughout Shas. It's shnei suma boim ka'echa in the lamdan. If the Torah has to repeat a certain din twice, then it means it applies only in those cases that it says. Nowhere else. Okay, that's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi's second explanation is that part of it is to teach us you shouldn't think. I mean, the korbanos of an ani are different. Maybe the procedure should be different by him also. Maybe with the asher you should use the left hand, but with the ani you don't have to. So therefore, the Torah needs to repeat it. So that's Rashi's second explanation. And then Rashi says, I don't really like these explanations. Rashi says because. Whenever we say the expression shnei ksuma boim ka'echad means you have two different dinim where the Torah says the same concept applies to both of them, and we say therefore it applies to only those two and not anywhere else. Here we're talking within the same thing over here. We're talking within a Torah. What kind of shnei ksuma boim ka'echad? So therefore,
normally
shnei ksuma boim ka'echad would be the Torah tells us a certain din in connection with one case. In connection with one mitzvah, and the same concept in connection with another mitzvah, and we're not meant to understand, therefore it applies to only those two, and not anything.
Here
it's talking all within the same concept of the Karbanos and the Torah. So what shneks to one point there, bud? So Rashi says, ultimately what it is fine, but since we have, but like this, ultimately what we're doing is the fact that the Gemara is stressing that you have four times smallest means, in other words, we have extra time that it says to stress the idea that it means only here, does it mean the left? Although, everywhere. Since you have all these extra times, that's why Rashi says from that we learn kan gila lach smolis, that here the Torah says both by the Ani and by the Asher that you need the left. Again, sort of like Rashi had said before, because we want to be aware that it applies equally by the Ani and by the Asher. But, in other words, if it was meant to learn from here for anything else, then you would only need three of them. You would have one of them the Gufay, one of them for the binyan out for everywhere else, and one of them that it shouldn't be Miyotakam. You wouldn't need a fourth one. The one with Gufay, One, that we would learn a binyan out from everywhere else, but tapping the left hand. The third one would be to teach us it's not a mir takamir, you don't need three. The fact that you have a fourth one is to teach us that no, don't do a binyan out from here. No, it means only here does tap mean small. And everywhere else is a time. Okay. Fine. I'm going to give me a little data. So Rav Yirmiyah asks Rav Zeira like this. If you're telling me that everything that the Torah repeats by the Oni, after it mentions these things, by the Osher, is meant for a Drosha, which we just said, that's why the two times smallest by the first section and the two times smallest by the second section, we're using them all for a Drosha. What about Alboyan Yobe Haimonis, Alboyan Dagle Haimonis, Yichtiv, Lomeli, then, Shemin de Mithra Osher Lomeli, then why, when you have another thing that's repeated between these two parts, is it says by the Mithra Osher, by the rich Mithra, with the three animal carbonates, it says that you put the blood and then the oil on his right thumb and his right ear and his right thumb and his right big toe, and then it repeats that again by the onion. So why should it need to repeat it? What are we learning from that?
Once
it says by one, you should learn it for the other one. Why does it need to repeat it? Obviously, it must be for a drasha. What is that drasha?
Why would we believe that it should?
Because otherwise, unless otherwise specified, we should assume that everything that applies to one applies to the other. And we just said that the fact that the Torah repeats smallest twice by the oni after saying it twice by the osher is meant for a drasha. It teaches us this concept that calf only over here means smallest, but everywhere else it means the right hand. So by the same logic, what are we learning extra from our boy, our Tznuch Oizen, our boy in Yodid, our boy in Nagloi, that we wouldn't have already known from before? The answer is, Chad Lahashus Dodin, V'chad L'Chotzidek Dodin. The answer is, one of them teaches us that it's kosher if the Kohen puts the blood and then the oil on the sides of the thumb and the toe. V'chad L'Chotzidek Dodin. And the other one teaches us that it's kosher if he puts it on the side of the side. So Rashi explains, Dodin would mean the sides of the finger. For example, here's the thumb. Like this, he's supposed to put it on over here, on the nail side of the thumb. But if he puts it on the side, that would also be kosher. That would be Dodin. But if he puts it on Sidek Dodin, meaning the palm side of the thumb, then it would be possible. So that's what we learned from Al Boyan Yodai and Al Boyan Ragli repeated, that one teaches that Dodin are kosher and the other one teaches us that Sidek Dodin. Yeah. So Dodin are kosher, Sidek Dodin are kosher. What about the point is Rashi says Al implies not tap, not underneath. When you put it on the palm side of the thumb, then that would be tap. That would be under the thumb. The normal way a person holds their hand is like that, with the palm down. Okay. What about Al Damo? What about that? By the Osher, it uses the expression that he should put the oil on the blood of the Osham. And by the Oni, it says, Al-Makoyim Dama Osham. It says you should put it on the place of the blood of the Osham. So why that difference? Why is it repeating and why that slight difference? Lamai Al-Dama Osham. By the Oni, it says, Al-Makoyim Dama Osham, right? Right? Lamai Osham. What are those coming for? Either it shouldn't have to repeat it, or at least, or why is it using a different expression in each shape? The answer is, seriously, we need both of them. Because Rahmana al-Dama Osham, because if the Torah only told us the words al-Dama Osham on the blood of the Osham, have amin eisei in Kaneach Loi, we would think it's only good if he puts the oil while the blood is still there. What if the blood was wiped off and you've seen? Because Rahmana al-Makoyim, therefore the Pasuk says al-Makoyim Dama Osham, which means even if the blood was wiped off, it's okay. As long as it was placed there at the time, then it's kosher now to put the oil there later. The Ikas Rahman al-Makoyim, and if it only said al-Makoyim Dama Osham, then have Amin a Davka Niskaneach, then you would say, okay, so it's kosher Davka if it was wiped off. Fakir, you would say, no, it's only kosher if it was wiped off, you would think, because Abu Isay, you would think, Fakir, if the blood is still there, Ema have a Chatzitza, you would think maybe it would be a Chatzitza against the oil. Kamashmulon al-Dama Osham, so therefore Davka says al-Dama Osham to say there's no problem of Chatzitza. If you put the oil there, whether, in other words, the two things teach us, on the one hand, you can put the oil there with the blood still being there, it's not a Chatzitza. On the other hand, you can also put the oil there even if the blood was already wiped off. Either way, it's equally kosher. That's why it says one expression by one and the other expression by the other. Davka Niskaneach, and you would think you Davka have to wipe it off before you put the blood on. Avot Isay, but if the blood was still there, and I have a chasitza, you would think maybe the blood would constitute a chasitza between the person's finger and the oil. Kamash Malan, Al Dama Asham, therefore it uses the expression Al Dama Asham to teach us that no, even if the blood is still there, it's okay to put the oil on top of it.
No
chasitza. No chasitza, right. So we'll continue tomorrow. We have two dots over here. I don't know why there's two dots, because we really continue the discussion. But anyway, we'll continue with this discussion about the Masorah tomorrow, and then eventually we'll get back to the concept of Menachah.